Welcome back. This is Chicken Philosophy. The I Ching, parentheses, Wilhelm, end parentheses, part two, in which, in which I'll pick up right where Fred or BT left off in part one. Cool. How's it going, everybody? Yes. Okay, so what we do here in these ones, this is the red and white, which is the 14th of the 15. So it's the second to last. I think I'm pointing at it. I hope I'm pointing at it. Second to last of the cycle of 15 called the metaphorical 15. Don't worry about any of that. All right. Cheers. Our beverage today is spearmint. It's just, I mean, I'm thinking more of like, what do I want to drink as opposed to what's going to be entertaining for y'all. So I know it's been spearmint most days lately. I'm off caffeine, so try to make it interesting for myself. There's some kind of noise pollution. It's about a 3.5, 4 on a scale of 1 to 10 of annoyance. At least it's like white noise. I don't know if you notice it, but I do. But anyway, I'm not going to let these things keep me from my true will, which is to make Chicken Philosophy episodes in the morning. Wow, the sun is really a character in these episodes lately. So that's... Cheers. And the incense, I had a craving for Tibetan incense, but I wanted to use one I haven't used in a while. See? So this is Lobsang incense. It's good. And my little candle flame is very low, but it should do the trick as long as I don't... Yeah, there we go. It's lighting off screen. If you haven't been paying attention, let's cue, play a little music while I light this incense.
Mama's lemon pound cake. It tastes so nice. It made the sheriff wanna...
So if you're curious, I'll leave it to you to do some homework. Get your little notepad out. Write down lemon pound cake trial. And when this video is done, you can search for that on YouTube. It's probably more entertaining than just Googling it and reading about it. But I'll leave it up to you. And then this will make more sense. All right. Okay. Now let's put on the music that we have dedicated to. Yes, the new white pedal music. The old white pedal music was this, but then now it's banned. You're not allowed to use it. Blocked worldwide if you use that album. So I had to mute a lot of... You know, some tracks I don't want to, like, get into. I don't need to go chasing after. Well, track 3 is blocked, but track 4 isn't blocked. But then tomorrow they might decide to block track 4. So I'm just avoiding the whole thing. Ricochet. Tangerine Dreams Ricochet is fine. And they strike me as people who aren't, you know, petty assholes, so I think that it will remain fine for me to use the music you're hearing right now, which, like, these two albums have in common, and like a few more, is that this is the music that my dad would buy at the warehouse. Anybody remember the warehouse? On tape, and then put the tape into the car radio tape player while we would go driving around Angeles Crest Mountains up in the hills, sometimes on dirt roads. So I have a lot of very positive association with these two albums, and the one we're hearing right now is Ricochet. And a lot of the music you hear, especially if you check out the Transformations video, that, what didn't get blocked... all that music is from driving around in the mountains with my dad. And my dad was the one who had all the Chinese stuff around his house. And So there's a hair thin thread of a connection between that and the subject for today. Yeah, let's just for shits and giggles, we'll do things a little different. Now there's things that the red and white episodes all have in common, but I think most people don't make it to the end of a red and white episode. So we'll do it at the beginning, so you know more people can join in on the fun. So what we do is since as I mentioned, this is the 14th of the 15, and when the cycle of 15 ends, then you get a cycle of 15 compilation video, which is an overly complicated name, you know, for such a silly and fun thing, but it's an accurate name, and it's just how I name things. So these are the thumbnails for the previous cycles of 15, including one that is 12 and one that is 6, but they count as cycles of 15 because I say so. So after this one, then BT is going to read Mech and Revelation. Then after that, the metaphorical 15 will come out. But before that, I mean, for the red and white, we're going to do a very quick, brief look back at the first 14 of the cycle of 15 that we're in the middle of, including this one, and let's do that right now. So, what the fuck? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Holy, is this really? No, this is, I didn't move the sticky. I'm rereading stuff that I read last time. Oh my god, you gotta move the sticky. Heaven and thunder, right? Water, mountain, earth, wind, and fire. So let's do them one at a time. Heaven, Qian, we'll work on our pronunciation later. Thunder, Chen. Water, Ka'an, K'A'N, mountain, Ken, earth, Ku'un, wind, Sun, fire, Li, and today, lake, Tui. Of life is in the eye of the beholder. It's a little bit of a grading on a curve because I want to like the Pie Mandarin. We finished the 8 trigrams. Well, we finished reading about the hexagrams that are the trigrams stacked on top of themselves. Welcome back. This is Chicken Philosophy. Gaia was where he attained enlightenment under the Bodhi tree, and then Sarnath was where he started teaching. He'd go straight to the unknowable, unfathomable Father. All right, that was fun. And now, as you can see, we're in the 14th one. That's the one that's this. Hey, Editor Edward.
Yes?
Am I correct in assuming that this is the first time ever that you and I have spoken while this is up above my head?
It is!
Yeah. So that's fun, right?
Pretty fun.
All right. Anyway, so those are the previous 14 episodes. If you want to check out the any and all of those 14 episodes, or 15 if you're in the future, here's the metaphorical 15. So there you have it. Okay. Moving along with the episode, the first thing we do, a little carryover from previous White Petal. It's the petal that has the Chinese stuff. Don't worry about it too much. So I'm going to pick one of these, and that's going to be our guide for the episode generally. And this is figure 10, I think. It's a weird 10, and it's solid, broken, triple solid. And we're going to put that, is this where it usually goes? That kind of right about there. We'll let that hang out for the duration. And Editor Edward's going to turn up the, you will play it? Turn up the Jarre, turn up the Tangerine Dream, never again with the Jarre. That guy, right? Well, I looked that one up. All right, so we've got Sheen or Heaven on top, right? Anybody seen Eraserhead? If you've seen Eraserhead, then the image above my head will make more sense. If you haven't, what are you doing, man? Watch Eraserhead. After you do the lemon pound cake trial, find a way. I don't know where it is, but you can find it and watch Eraserhead. Okay, it's important. And then, Sheen or Heaven, and that's on top. Tui is Lake, and that's on the bottom. So, those are the two figures that make up the figure that this figure. And that's big on the screen right there. Yeah. It's cool, right? A little bit. Okay, so I'm gonna read just the top part. Lu is the name of this figure. When you put the two trigrams together, you get a hexagram called Lu. With two dots over the U, I don't know what the two dots do. Treading or conduct. And then the little blurb says, lasting progress is won through quiet self-discipline. So don't make a lot of noise with the flail. Do quietly. Oh no, that's self-flagellation. Self-discipline. No, quiet self-discipline. All right. Yeah. Not out loud self-discipline. That's obnoxious, right? Because then all the people who, for one reason or another, aren't exerting self-discipline feel like you're like being preachy or something, or like subtly kind of preachy. Like when vegans talk about how they're vegan, it's like, they're not necessarily like coming at you and saying, you know, milk is for babies and that milk is for baby cows, you know, but you know they're about to, or you know they're thinking it, you know, so it's that kind of thing. Like, yeah, I can get behind that. Quiet self-discipline will do whatever good thing it said. So that's our I Ching for today. And thank you for coming. No. Now we're going to pick up where we left off. Hopefully finish reading Helmut and get into some Carl. What have I said? What did I just say? Okay, are you ready? So we're reading Helmut. This is Helmut. Helmut Wilhelm talking about his father, Richard Wilhelm, who is the translator, the great translator of the I Ching. No, the translator of the great I Ching. No. They're both great, right? I don't know. The consensus seems to be, it's like 5 stars, like, you know, 10,000, I don't know how many ratings, but everybody gives this 5 stars, so. And Carl Jung gave it 5 stars, so. So there it is. Just jump in, shall we? Continuing with the Wilhelm. In addition to the endeavors outlined above, or in the previous episode, recent scholarship has concerned itself with other aspects of the book which cannot be dealt with here. The most prominent among these is the purity of the book's system, which already amazed Leibniz. Well, if you're gonna amaze Leibniz, then that's all. It's like, can die happy. His tombstone. He amazed Leibniz that one time. No, I don't know who Leibniz is. And another concerns apocryphal writings which were connected with the book and which reflect, among other things, a developed interest in the prognostication, yes, and portentology called to life by the political battles of the day rather than by an understanding of the book's own message. All right. At first I thought they were subtly making reference to Seeker the Golden Flower, but then I don't know. I have no idea. So a little out of the loop on that one. Pleasantly, it's nice to be out of the loop on some kind of political bullshit that was going on back then that involved the I Ching, and I'm way too young to remember hearing about it. I don't know if Kes would know about that, but anyway, Kes Fry. He's the guy who got my dad into the Secret of the Golden Flower Wilhelm translation. So, okay. Reference has been made, passive voice munch, are we a lawyer, to recent Chinese scholarship regarding the Book of Changes. In other words, when you want to, like, avoid saying, the eggs have fallen on the ground. No, that's not passive voice, is it? Instead of saying, I did this, you say, that was done. Like when my wife says, what happened to the cookies? And I say, I think they got eaten, you know. Not saying, I ate them. Why weren't paying attention? This renewed interest in the book is fundamentally different, of course, from the one that produced the abundance of I Ching studies during imperial times. Right. Imperial times meaning pre-Mao, right? Yeah. From before Mao, from the day before Mao, back through into ancient Chinese history. That's the Chinese imperial, not British imperial, right? Is that what we mean by imperial when we say imperial China? Right? I think so, right? The book is no longer considered part of the Holy Writ, but is submitted to the same type of analysis as any other ancient text would be. The results have been highly rewarding. There is, however, evidence of a continued strain of reverence, which has by now overcome, or more cautiously, is about to overcome, the fashion of the earlier Republican times. Surely he means that in a different way than we might. To see in the book only a conglomerate of the superstition, or, at the least, murk. Oh, I got murk in this one, too. Anybody know what I'm talking about? There was murk in... Never mind. Everybody knows, of course, that a host of problems still remains unsolved, but sober scholarship gradually recognizes, again, that what has been dealt with in the book is a unique manifestation of the human mind. The more emotionally inclined have proceeded to regard the book as one of the most treasured parts of the Chinese tradition. You mean that's not an objective truth? To the extent that opinions can be expressed, this is true even in the context of communist China. I'm curious about when he's writing, but we'll let that... Usually at the very end, they sign it and then say the date that they're writing. So we'll just be curious. Is it the 80s? When is this that he's talking? Kuo Mojo, who until his recent purge was the foremost cultural official of communist China, devoted himself to the book extensively, particularly in his earlier years. I'm going to guess early 90s. Let's see if I'm right. And when in the early 60s, maybe I'm totally wrong, the ideological reins were somewhat relaxed and it was possible for a time to deal with matters of intellectual concern, the two issues which engendered nationwide discussions were the ethical system of Confucius. Oh, I was waiting until they brought up his name before. Let's make him a little... Can we... Yeah, okay, that's nice. Except, okay, because of the sun, and because I have a pile of books right here blocking the sun, we're going to put him on the screen right there, and Editor Edward is going to subtly lower him down to the bottom of the screen. All right, so now Confucius is with us. Hopefully he doesn't confuse us. All right. Yeah, the ethical system of Confucius and the Book of Changes, or this I Ching, right? By now, these discussions have been curtailed, but the phenomenon persists. Whenever the rare chance of expression is given, the book emerges as one of the foremost concerns of Chinese intellectuals, even under the specific set of circumstances prevailing on mainland China. When this new edition was being prepared, the editors gave much thought to the question whether a rearrangement of the contents of the book might facilitate its use for the non-Chinese reader. The final decision was to leave unchanged the arrangement which my father had chosen. I feel like that's a good choice. This decision was based not only on the conviction that books too are organisms, which should undergo incisive operations only in dire emergencies. The more important consideration was that the present arrangement is the most meaningful and the easiest to handle. In the Chinese tradition, in the traditional Chinese editions, the presentation of the text is not uniform. The problem of arrangement pertains particularly to the text of certain of the ten wings, which might either be divided up among the hexagrams or be read as a continuous text. The second alternative has points in its favor. One of the wings, the book Tsa Kua, T-S-A, K-U-A, Miscellaneous Notes on the Hexagrams, in parentheses, which discusses the hexagrams one by one, or rather in pairs, does not coincide in sequence with the hexagram in the main text. I wonder how the pairs... That'll be interesting to find out. I guess we'll find out as we read. Probably not today, but in the future. The particular curve of development thus gets lost when this book is divided up among the hexagrams. Nor is this all. The Tsa Kua, when read in its own sequence, is an accomplished poem with a firm prosodic structure and a consistent rhyme scheme. The same is true of the small images. The commentaries on the line texts found in the third book of this translation. Thus, here we have early examples of didactic Chinese poetry, the features of which are lost when these texts are divided up among the hexagrams. Okay? These considerations notwithstanding, my father chose, after much hesitation, to employ a modified form of the first alternative for the arrangement of his translation. See the chart opposite, the major divisions of the material. That's what he's talking about, and we'll put that kind of big there for a little while, so it's hopefully big enough for you to see and look at while I'm just for a little bit until I decide. He furthermore chose to distinguish systematically, again with one modification, between the older layers of the texts and the material of the Ten Wings. In this way, he arrived at a division into three books. Okay, that's enough. You can go back and pause it if you want to look at that for longer. The old text, the material, and the commentaries contained in the Ten Wings. All right. Book one gives the older layers of the text, the judgments pertaining to the hexagrams as a whole, and the line texts. To these he added the so-called great images, which appear for each hexagram under the caption, The Image. Editor Edward, do you remember when we were riding our bicycle a lot back in, I don't know, 15 years ago? There was an I Ching thing in Chinatown, Los Angeles, and I think we took a picture of the bicycle and the I Ching thing. If you can find that, could you put it over my head right now? I remember taking that picture, and I remember that picture, but I haven't seen that picture in a very long time. So if you found it, I'm impressed. Editor Edward is pretty good at his job. Anyway, the image, what? The hexagram under the caption, The Image, these do, of course, belong to the wings. Their inclusion here reflects my father's special approach to the book. Of a later date, these texts reflect a more advanced interpretation and understanding of the situation represented in the individual hexagrams. In frequent surprising statements, they formulate succinctly the reaction of the superior man to any relation to the Ubermensch to the to the specific transfigure, except for maybe the I Ching helped inspire Nietzsche, but time flows that way. So, and there's some connections. They're both German, and never mind, I'll just keep reading. The superior man to the specific configuration of imagery offered by the system of the line structure. They are thus not to be considered commentaries on specific passages of the older texts, as the so-called small images and the wen-yen are. They constitute a third and independent approach, in addition to the judgments and the line texts, to the situations entailed by the hexagrams. To the translation of these three types of classical texts, my father added his own elucidative remarks. In this, as in other editions, printed in smaller type, smaller than this, this is pretty small. All right. These remarks are based on a careful reading of the latter, or the later post-classical commentary literature on his discussions with Lao and other friends and experts, the modern scholarly literature then available, and on his own understanding and interpretation of the passages and situations involved. Book 2 contains the translations of the more systematic among the Ten Wings, specifically the Shuo Kua, or discussion of the trigrams. I'm looking forward to that, because we had to squeeze a discussion of the trigrams like water from a stone out of that book, but now we can move on. Here's the eight trigrams. We did a whole thing with the eight trigrams in I Ching, parentheses, Walker. If you want to, there were 10 parts. Nine, really, but there's a 10th one redirecting people to come to the I Ching, parentheses, Wilhelm after that. All right, so there you go. And the Ta Chuan, or Great Treatise, the translated... Oh, this was 1966. I was way off. Okay, so anyway, the translated passages... We're getting to the end, so I saw the date. The translated passages... Again, being elucidated by my father's own remarks, to these translations is appended an essay from my father's own hand, quote, the structure of the hexagrams, and quote, another, quote, on consulting the oracle, end quote, has been transposed to the end of the volume for this edition. Book 3. Finally, is again arranged in the sequence of the hexagrams. It repeats the basic translations found in Book 1 and arranges under them those books and passages from the Ten Wings that are considered commentary to the texts. All right. These include passages found in the Great Treatise, which are repeated here under the caption, quote, appended judgments, end quote, a term which is the rendering of an alternate name of this treatise, Hsi Tzu, T-Z apostrophe U. Here again, my father's own remarks, in smaller type, are added to the translations, dealing in this case not so much with the general considerations as with technical and systematic aspects, the principles and concepts of which are discussed in the above-mentioned essay on, quote, the structure of the hexagrams, end quote. Helmut Wilhelm, Seattle, December 1966. And he spells it with two L's. Now, I think a lot of places I've seen it spells Helmut with one L. So, I don't know. But he seemed to sign his own thing with two L's. So, there you go. All right. Thank you, Helmut. I think that might be the last we're going to hear from Helmut, the son of Frederick. Wilhelm. Richard Wilhelm. So... You know, nice. Well done. If anyone from the Wilhelm tribe, clan, family, we'll go with family, is watching. Hello. Thanks for being you, I guess. I don't know. Whatever. Thanks for watching. Like and subscribe. All right. I'm stalling here because the next thing is the foreword by Carl Jung. And I'm a little nervous because of my experience with Carl Jung commentating on things translated by Richard Wilhelm. But the sooner we start the foreword, the sooner we finish the foreword. And hopefully it's not as bad, because I think Wilhelm was still alive. I mean, not that that maybe that factors in, maybe it doesn't. So Carl might not feel as free to like come out and be like, let me tell you. And I think with Secret of the Golden Flower, there were layers of aspects, because there was I don't know when, I think he wrote one thing and then published, I'm not entirely sure how that went down, but it seems like there was definitely something in there. Yeah, no, I think in the beginning he was like addressing the blowback from having published it in the first place. But I think his actual introduction was in the original thing that he published. But then people were like, ah, Carl Jung wants us all to sit and roll our eyes back and squeeze our perineum and make our chi flow backwards and attain eternal life. Wow, Carl Jung's really gone off his rocker. So he's like, has to write this like response to the assholes in 1930 or whatever, or whenever he wrote it. You know, I mean, he published it in 31. I mean, so Richard Wilhelm passed away, and then I think it was published after Richard Wilhelm died. Secret of the Golden Flower, I mean. And so Carl wrote half the book. He wrote half the book as Carl's commentary. And a lot of it he's, like, addressing his present-day people. And, like, I think he's agreeing with parts. He's trying to get them on his side again because he, like, lost a lot of them just by even talking about anything Chinese, you know, because people are racist, white people in 1930... that close to Germany, you know. But anyway, the point is, what's the point? The point is, we're going to read Carl Jung's foreword on the I Ching now. And I think he probably wrote it while Wilhelm was still in the world. And I don't know what it's going to say, and I'm a little nervous. All right, I'm going to take a sip of spearmint, steel myself. So real quick, if you don't know, this is, I forget his like legal name, but he's known as Afro Man. I think I'm allowed to say that because that's his name. But, you know, you don't want to be like, hey, nice Afro, you know, to like a stranger. You know what I mean? Referring to a hairdo. Because some people are sensitive about the use of that word. I don't know. That's what I heard. I went to this silly school where they were like, oh, don't use these words. What am I talking about? I don't know. No, yeah, okay, let's play his most famous song just a little bit.
I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and find the broom, but then I got high. My room is still messed up, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, cause I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La da da
da da da. So that was. So, funny story. I don't want to read Carl Jung right now, so I'll just tell you about Afro Man. So, he recorded this in like a little studio his friend had. I don't know, like, I don't know those specifics, but the point is, he burned it on CD, because that was back when you would do that, you know. And this was early 2000s, right? And he was handing it out in the parking lot of, like, you know, a club or a concert or something. And so, some kids put it in their car stereo and listened to it. They loved it so much. Somehow they burned it, or maybe they went home and did it on their computer. I don't know. But they ripped it. So burning it is putting it on the CD. Ripping it is taking it off the CD, right? I think. So they uploaded it to LimeWire, which was a shared files network. Nutella, not to be confused with the thing you eat. It's got a G in it. Never mind. So it went viral on LimeWire. And, you know, before he knew it. So he was out handing out these CDs. And then he got a call, like, while he was still out or when he got home or whatever. And it was, like, a major record company saying, hey, we'd like to sign you. And he's like, how do you know who I am? And he's like, well, you're famous. You know, like, your song has been downloaded like 2 million times or whatever, you know. And so yeah, he went from rags to riches in a sense that way. And then later, you know, like that was, he was sort of joking based. Actually, he hadn't smoked weed before at that time. But he wrote the song based on like his friends and stories he heard and, you know, just like, but then he started smoking weed because why not, you know. And then much later, time went by, decades went by, and then he recorded another version, like a second version of that one that goes a little more like this.
Glaucoma's getting better, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, because I got high.
Baby.
Because I got high.
Yeah.
Because I got high.
A lot of that time.
So see how he took kind of the main idea, the main thrust, and the main sound, you know, the songs and the words and everything, but instead of making it negative, like the first one does, he ends up paraplegic and in jail and all kinds of horrible things because he got high, but then now his glaucoma is better and, you know, all kinds of stuff because he got high, and so, yeah, he's quite a character. I'm a fan, I must say. But yeah, he was just in court, like, less than 24 hours ago. And all the cops looked very foolish. And so anyway, that you can do your own research about that if you'd like. And we'll put a link to the Lemon Pound Cake album in the end screen for today. Okay. Footnotes. All right. Should I read the footnotes? Yeah, why not? Let's just read the hell out of this Carl Jung foreword. And then when it's done, it'll be done. Hopefully it's short. Foreword. Since I am not a sinologue, good start, I foreword to the Book of Changes from my hand must be a testimonial of my individual experience with this great and singular book. It also affords me a welcome opportunity. By the way, a sinologue is a person who studies China. I think a sinophile is a person who likes China, right? It also affords me a welcome opportunity to pay tribute again to the memory of my late friend Richard Wilhelm. Oh, okay, so he wrote this later. He himself was profoundly aware of the cultural significance of his translation of the I Ching, a version unrivaled in the West. So he was important and he knew it. This is a nice way of saying that. No.
I'm sexy and I know it.
If the meaning of the Book of Changes is like Martin Luther saying, God has chosen me to usher in this new era of humanity and bring about a reconciliation between humanity and God by breaking away from the church and establishing this new movement, he was like, yeah, well, you know, trying to be humble about it, but yeah, I am a pretty big deal, you know, like, it's kind of fun when that happens. Okay, if the meaning of the Book of Changes were easy to grasp, the work would need no foreword. Okay. But this is far from being the case, for there is so much that is obscure about it that Western scholars have tended to dispose of it as a collection of magic spells. Okay, all right. Either too obtrusive to be intelligible or of no value whatsoever. Okay. Lege's translation, like that, yeah, that's true. And I've noticed that even among people that I talk to about it. And they're like, I Ching? Oh, yeah, I'm not really into things like I Ching, astrology, tarot, you know, for the reasons that you've heard me talk about before. It's like, it gets people into a paranoid headspace and it can. It doesn't necessarily have to. But, yeah, like, but just like how, you know, I'm interested in the meanings of the tarot cards, or used to be, I mean, have been long enough that now I'm at the point where I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, sometimes I'll revisit it for the Carl Jung thing, but, I mean, the BT, the black and that one. Never mind. But yeah, and as far as tarot, let's put up the Lotus Wand, me using, hopefully you can you see that? That's the Lotus Wand. He's using it as a wand. The thing with the Lotus Wand is it's got the 12 signs of the zodiac on it. So when you need to call upon, you know, a certain type of fire, you hold it by the yellow band, that's the Leo band, and you point the lotus end, and then you are invoking Leo. And then if for some reason you needed to banish Leo, then you'd turn it around and you'd use it like a pencil, holding it by the yellow band and pointing with the black end on the bottom. So wielding these forces, and you've seen that thing that BT wears in the center of his cross is this, And the outer 12 petals refer to the 12 signs of the zodiac, but they're all present at once. The Latin title given to, well, sort of Latinish title given to, or Greek, whatever it is, Hodos Chameleonis, which, I mean, it's got a word that sounds like chameleon in it, but they say that it's the path of many colors. So in other words, you know, when someone says, oh, what are you? What's your sign? And it's like, oh, you're an uninitiated person. Right, okay, I'm a Virgo. But I know that I'm all 12. And, you know, I can be whatever I need to be in the moment. But maybe there's some predisposition from my life before I was all 12, back when I was a Virgo. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. What are you talking about? I don't know. Yeah, no, I'm just saying I kind of grok what he's saying. And by the way, grok, don't let Elon Musk have that word. So that's what grok means. It comes from this book, Stranger in a Strange Land. I'm not saying what's-his-name is that great of a guy or that he's not a total chauvinist. Sometimes people can be total chauvinists and also good writers of sci-fi. Just ask St. Paul. Christianity as sci-fi? Ancient sci-fi. For them, it was sci-fi. They weren't very good at it. No, maybe fantasy. No, I'll stop being like that. Was I saying anything? Was there anything left to say? No, probably not. It probably wasn't important. All right, continuing. Yes, magic spells of no value whatsoever. Legge's translation of the I Ching up to now is the only version available in English. Yeah. That's kind of what I was getting at. It's worth looking at and going, about the Tree of Life, which has all the tarot cards, well, all the tarot trumps. I mean, kind of. If you look at it a certain way, it has the minor arcana on it as well, because it has ace through ten, and, you know, it has the four worlds, which are the court cards. So, yeah, basically, the whole tarot deck is here represented, and it's, again, all happening at once. It's all present. You can focus more on one area than on another at a particular time, and you can approach it as like a path that you walk if you want to, or you can just kind of like look at it and go, okay, that's that, that's that, that's that. Sort of like saying left brain, right brain, you know, like, oh, that's my this aspect of my nature, that's my that aspect of my nature. And so, and that also includes zodiacal is part, again, this is the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, of course, and the 22 tarot trumps. Again, tarot trumps, nothing to do with the orange Darth Cheeto, you know. So, and then Black Friday. This is Black Friday. Yeah, it's not entirely 100% agreed upon by scholars or whatever. But that's, yeah, Black Friday was the original Friday, the 13th. Friday, October 13th, 1307. And on the 700-year anniversary, me and a bunch of other Gnostics, you might say, that's kind of how we looked at it at the time, got together with Father Alexei and some of the people who, the core group over there at St. Andrew and El Segundo, and we went to see the Dead Sea Scrolls, and I made a video about it called Pyramids, which is not on the internet, but there is a reaction video I did, but when I was in between hats, there were some really awkward videos where I'm like, hi, I'm Gwydion. You can tell because I just said my name is Gwydion and I'm on a channel called Gwydion, but I look just like Edward, and I used to wear a hat, you see, and then so Pew then later got me a hat. I don't think she meant to, you know, anything related to Gwydion when she did, but anyway, what's the point? No point. The point is I'm just avoiding reading the Carl. That video called Pyramids was my tale about... Let's just play a little bit of it.
I'm waiting for the night to fall.
You know what? She's in the room.
Jen from Una. This band. This music. Too much of that, because I don't know, maybe at some point in the future they'll have some kind of deal where they have some stranglehold with YouTube and try to block my videos for playing their music for longer than 5 seconds. But yeah, no, great band. It's hard to find them because when you search for Una, you get anything but the band. And even when you search for Una Music, you get anything but the band. So yeah, okay. So what I'll do is I'll put a link to them. One way or another, I don't know if it's going to be a playlist or a video or just their channel. And whatever the other thing was I was going to put... So it's going to be... I'll put one of their videos or one of their songs or whatever. There's a little... They asked me to make them, or I offered. I don't know how it went down. But I was making them music videos for a while, but then they talked to somebody or they had a band meeting and they decided to make me take it all down. And I kind of like... wasn't happy about that, but because they were very low quality and whatever, I don't know, they didn't want that. They for a minute they were like, yeah, it's indie, oh, YouTube was new, so it was kind of like, yeah, now it's like every man can make their own thing, you know. And my dad had that whole thing about narrow casting, and I was kind of like putting the two ideas together. And the point is, I'll put the Afro Man Lemon Pound Cake album, which was the album he made to make fun of the cops, and that was why he was in court for defamation. And then down here I'll put at least a song by Una. And so check them both out, I have to say. I know it's a little bit of a hassle, but you have to play the end of this video twice in order to link to one and then link to the other. But Una's just, if you need Una in your life, if it's not there already, and you need Afro Man in your life, I think. I mean, need is a strong word. I'm being hyperbolic when I say that. I want to share those two things. All right, anyway, Legge's translation of the I Ching, up to now, when's now, 1930, whatever, up to now, the only version available in English, has done little to make the work accessible to Western minds. Footnote! Legge makes the following comment on the explanatory text for the individual lines. Quote, according to notions, a framer of emblems should be a good deal of a poet, but those of the Yi... my ears are perked up because I'm like, that guy told me that I needed to stop reading this book because it doesn't have the Yi in it. And I'm like, the what? So this is the first time they've mentioned the Yi. See if we come away from this a little more enlightened about what it is. But those of the Yi only make us think of dry as dust. One word, D-R-Y-A-S-D-U-S-T. Dry as dust. Is there anything we can put above my head about dry as dust? Or is it just what I think it is, dry as dust? Out of more than 350, the greater number are only grotesque. End quote. The Sacred Book of the East, XVI, the Yi King, and Eden, Oxford, Claremont, Clarendon Press, 1899, page 22. Of the lessons of the hexagrams, the same author says, but why, it may be asked, what? That wasn't Editor Edward, that was some guru. Editor Edward played the clip, if you were confused. Editor Edward is me. If you didn't know, I'm the sole producer and editor and guy behind... There's no other team. I'm not the face of Jacob Philosophy on the whole thing. There is no... Like, I'm actually also Edward and BT and Pine. Did you know that? And the editor. It's my little project I do. That and Buddhist Books Podcast. Buddhist Books Podcast was my main project for a long time, and Chicken Philosophy came along to like alleviate kind of some of the weird identity crisis that I was having as a result of being the Buddhist Books guy for 2 years. What? But why, it may be asked, why should they be conveyed in such to us by such an array of lineal figures? And in such a farrago of emblematic representations. Yeah, Legge's kind of a twerp, isn't he? No, that's not the right word. End quote. However, we are nowhere told that Legge ever bothered to put the method to a practical test. Oh, Legge never did the I Ching. He just wrote about the I Ching. Well, I've heard from Carl already that... Maybe, I think parts of this forward might be... they might be quoted in the Black Books. But anyway, all right. Back to the text, no longer reading the footnote. Wilhelm, however, has made every effort to open the way to an understanding of the symbolism of the text. He was in a position to do this because he himself was taught the philosophy and the use of the I Ching by the venerable sage Lao Nai Hsuan. Moreover, he had, over a period of many years, put the particular technique of the oracle into practice. His grasp of the living meaning of the text gives his version of the I Ching a depth of perspective that an exclusively academic knowledge of Chinese philosophy could never provide. I am greatly indebted to Wilhelm for the light he has thrown upon the complicated problem of the I Ching, and for insight as regards its practical application as well. For more than 30 years, I have interested myself in this oracle technique, or method of exploring the unconscious, for it has seemed to me of uncommon significance. I was already fairly familiar with the I Ching when I first met Wilhelm in the early 1920s. He confirmed for me then what I already knew and taught me many things more. Okay. I do not know Chinese and I have never been in China. I can assure my reader that it is not altogether easy to find the right access to this monument of Chinese thought. By the way, while he was writing this, my grandfather was living in China and had been for many years. And what was it that... let's play the book on tape of The Lady and the Panda real quick.
Dan Reeb. He had spent months on end living in faraway places that no other foreigner had ever penetrated. He had even been captured, tortured, and held for ransom.
Yeah, and then another 9 years later, my dad was born in China, so that's the Chinese connection on my... I'm just bragging about that. What? I can assure my reader that it is not altogether easy to find the right access to this monument of Chinese thought, which departs so completely from our ways of thinking, in order to understand what such a book is all about, it is imperative to cast off certain prejudices of the Western mind. It is a curious fact that such a gifted and intelligent people as the Chinese has never developed what we call science. Yeah, he got into this kind of talking in his introduction to The Secret of the Golden Flower. All right, whatever, I'll just keep reading. Our science, our being white people, of course, however, is based upon the principle of causality. And causality is considered to be an axiomatic truth. Carl, if you want to compare white people things and Chinese things, and you're looking at the I Ching, compare it to fucking tarot, you idiot. Or any of the other, you know, systems of divination and wisdom rooted in ancient, you know, pagan things. Like, comparing I Ching to science and going, ah, it's weird, they never developed science? Like, I'll just keep reading stupid shit. Our science, however, is based upon the principle of causality, and causality is considered to be an axiomatic truth. But a great change in our standpoint is setting in. What Kant's critique of pure reason failed to do is being accomplished by modern physics. The axioms, modern in 1930, the axioms of causality are being shaken to their foundations. We know now that what we term natural laws are merely statistical truths and thus must necessarily allow for exceptions. We have not sufficiently taken into account as yet that we need the laboratory with its incisive restrictions in order to demonstrate the invariable validity of natural law. If we leave things to nature, we see a very different picture. Every process is partially or totally inferred with by chance. So much so that under natural circumstances, a course of events absolutely conforming to specific laws is almost an exception. I don't know. I think that, like, seeing a frog, observing the frog, observing frogs, paying attention to frogs, studying frogs, looking at frogs, that's fine. But judging a culture of a billion people for never having thought, I should cut the frog in half and label all its parts and pin them to a little piece of paper. again and again and again, and make my children do it too. Like, Germans, fucking Germans, vines? Is it? No, I don't know. I'm just talking shit. Just talking shit. Just, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just, I know what bugs me. And then I analyze, why does that bug me? Is it true? Is someone saying something true, but it's bugging me because of buttons instilled by, like, people who are trying to make the world nicer? You know what I mean? And what is the value of adding these prohibited things of, you know? Like, I've been going back and forth about this with, like, should I read Teilhard de Chardin again? Because I bought a bunch of his books, and I have been long curious about his point of view. But when people were saying, you know, all races are equal, it is not right, it is bad and racist to say that one type of human is genetically superior to another. And Teilhard de Chardin was saying, okay, what you're saying right now is scientifically meaningless. If we look at the actual DNA and we look at the predispositions to certain disease, clearly these people over here have superior genes. Like, and it's like, okay. And that, it's become extremely unpopular, and for good reason, because that, like, eugenics type thinking led to experimentation on people in concentration camps, right? As we all know. Most of us know that, right? And so the association between Nazism and, you know, talking like Teilhard de Chardin was talking at that time, makes it really kind of distasteful and gross to be like, oh. Like, even people look at Idiocracy and see, oh, this is classist and eugenics thinking, isn't it? The whole basis of, like, well, you see, the stupid people had lots of kids and the smart people didn't, and so as a result the human race became stupid over the course of the centuries. Like, the basic premise of the movie, right? Anyway. So, I don't know. What am I talking about? Yeah, Carl with his, like, yeah, in 1930 a person would, you know, like, I don't think he means it as an insult. Like, it's curious, such an advanced people never came up with, like, science with test tubes. I mean, they had alchemy and stuff like that. I mean, alchemy gave way to what we call chemistry, right? And I don't know. I think that there's probably, like, well, you know, like, if you define science very specifically as, like, okay, the formula of hypothesis and testing and then proving and then peer-reviewed papers and then academia and then, you know, like, white suits, and then look over there, like, yeah, I don't see any of those things in that culture, but I'm pretty sure they would experiment to figure out if something was true, right? Like, if a person has, like, a disease and then you give them a certain medicine and it works, and then you're like, okay, you know, like, well, 100 times people with those symptoms came to me and I gave them this medicine, and 100 times it worked. This medicine cures that disease. We'll call that disease this, we'll call this medicine this. Is that not science? Is that not the same fucking thing as, you know, it's just less German, right? I don't know. It's just, Carl Jung annoys me sometimes, but other times he doesn't. I mean, there's things about, like, I'm sure I annoy people if enough people. I know I annoy some people, but if, God forbid, I were heard by a large number of people, I'm sure that there'd be percentages of people that would be like, okay, here's what annoys me about that fucking chicken philosophy guy, right? So, if they're allowed to get annoyed, I'm allowed to get annoyed, right? So, there you go. Okay, well, we didn't really get into the I Ching today, as is the case for any new book that we start reading. There's usually a lot of introduction, and at least a few episodes of introduction before we actually get into the good part. And I'm not going to peek ahead, so I'm going to leave us both in suspense about how long that forward is, if it's 40 pages or if it's just one more page. I don't know. Literally not going to peek ahead. I'm going to try not to. So next time in part 3, we will continue, maybe finish, one can hope, reading Carl Jung's foreword. So far, it's okay. I think, like, it's just pushing buttons of the trauma that I have, lowercase t trauma of having read so much of Carl Jung's commentary on Wilhelm's translation of Secret of the Golden Flower. That was like an ongoing thing for months of like, God damn it, Carl, fucking shut up, you know. And he's just like touching on, oh yeah, that reminds me of those months that we spent reading his bullshit, right? So that's the only thing. But I think in and of itself, it's basically fine. He's just talking. He's just like, how come they don't do? Carl, stop it. Just stop. All right. So there it is. Okay. Stuff to think about a little bit, maybe. Remember, quiet self-discipline. Don't get too confused by Confucius. And do click one of the links in the end screen and hear some music that maybe you haven't heard before. So if you want some kind of cool trip hop, groovy sort of Portishead, you know, like leaning, like good to find out who the woman was who said she's in the room. In the video I made about the 700 year anniversary of the real Black Friday, not the stupid Thanksgiving sale, you know, that took over the phrase on Google. So now you can't, like, now you can search for Friday, October 13, 1307 or whatever. But you used to be able to just search for Black Friday before they invented that new Black Friday, and you'd read about the same thing because that's what it was called. Anyway. All right, so click one of the links, enjoy the music, and see you next time.
Why you disconnecting my video camera? Why you disconnecting my video camera? Why you disconnecting my video camera? We oughta throw crooked cops in the slammer. Why you disconnecting my video camera? Why you disconnecting my video camera? Why you disconnecting my video camera? We oughta throw crooked cops in the slammer.